pretty bleak. So, if anybody wants me to ask me wants to ask me about any of these figures, I can refer to them again.
Okay. We'll take a stack for questions and answers, but as usually we go to the other finance committee member from the station, which is me. So I just want to make a note because Barbara didn't mention it, and I think it's important. For a number of the past couple of years, KPFA has always begun its fall fund drive in late September, usually some date between September 15th and September 20th. Well, I think the latest that it was done was September 23rd. Accordingly, they rolled over anywhere from 8 to 15 days of income into the fiscal year that ends September 30th, and that did, in fact, happen in the previous fiscal year. This year, KPFA made the decision not to do that and to begin the fall fund drive October 2nd so that the income break is much clearer. And that sacrificed, I think last year it would have been about 7 days of fundraising, so say $15,000. So that sacrificed somewhere between $100,000 and $150,000 of income that would have been in this fiscal year, can listener support, into next year. So that explains largely the discrepancy in can listener support. Had the fund drive been split between the two fiscal years, as it always had been before, the listener support numbers would have been pretty much right on the money. And I think that's an important distinction to be made. The idea was because KPFA had been running ahead on listener revenue numbers all year long, that this was a pretty good year to sort of make that cut because it's much cleaner for accounting purposes. Fund drives ideally are in one fiscal year or the other, not split half and half. So the idea was to take a small loss this year in order to sort of clean that up going forward. So I think that is basically what lies behind the listener revenue shortfall. Other than that, I think what Barbara said is pretty much right on. The website income has been disappointing. KPFA needs to do more with its website. The major donor income and donations were slightly higher than actually panned out, and the Finance Committee will remember that we adjusted that in this year's budget. And I think that was a good move. And the expenses are primarily two categories, and that won't surprise anyone on this committee. The gross salaries ran over, and the legal expenses ran over. And that's all that I would say. So do we have a Q&A for the stack? And
That's LaVarne.
Okay, LaVarne, and anybody else?
Bill?
Okay, let's start there. I'm sure some more people will pipe in. LaVarne, you're up.
Okay. Thank you, Barbara, for the report. By the way, thank you, Paul, for the report, also for BAI. I just want to give a little more information like Tracy had done. I'm also looking at the headcount, full-time FTEs, full-time equivalents. So the report on that in October of 2010, there were the number of workers that were on board at that time, there were 56 at KPFA, and there were 31 FTEs, full-time equivalents, at the time in October 2010. In September 2011, there were 46, or really 47 people on board working at KPFA. So these are people who could be working, like, very few hours. We are just counting people. So there were 47, and the FTEs are 26. So it shows that from October 2010 to September 2011, went down by 5 FTEs from 31 to 26. The other thing is that concerning the deficit, we're still doing interest. We're still trying to determine legal costs and the split between KPFA and the bills that we have received at the national office. That also there was the taxes that were paid to Alameda County and the attempt to get a rebate, not just on the taxes paid in 2011, but also we've been told I sent information for 3 years back. So there should be a credit coming from Alameda County, which, I'll have the discussion with the auditor who's here in terms of if that should be applied for 2011. So there will be some positive credit there. The other thing is with the San Francisco Foundation. We have attempted to send information over to show that we're supposed to, KPFA is supposed to be allowed to get the funding for capital from the San Francisco Foundation. You know, we the initial deposit was $375. It had gone up to over $460, but it has come back down again with the market. But that we were supposed to, that funds were supposed to be released, a small amount. And then we're also supposed to get they're supposed to transfer funds for capital. And so we have asked for that. We will ask for that again so that, you know, we'll try to get that so that that adjustment will be made as we go through the audit. The other thing is that in 2010, KPFA lost $629,903. And right now it shows that we're at a deficit of $74. And like I said, we'll get some credit for definitely for Alameda County taxes. If we look at that number, it's probably, what, about 15 a year or something like that. And then in addition, we'll go back and try to get the funding from San Francisco Foundation. So and coupled with what Tracy had said about the fund drive, that KPFA actually had a very successful year compared to the prior years of over $500,000 in losses. So I'd like to congratulate the staff, the listeners, number one, and the staff, volunteers, and all at KPFA for the finance committee there who helped to make this thing happen. So congratulations.
I have a question for Laverne.
Sure, I'm here.
I was waiting for Tracy to say it was okay.
Oh, well, we'll just go ahead.
Is there?
Bill is on the stack, but you guys can.
I'm sorry.
I just want to ask if there was a particular amount that you've applied to the San Francisco Foundation for.
Well, I'm not sure the exact amount, but what we want is we want them to release funds for all capital expenditures. So what everything that we have receipts and invoices, that's what we want them to reimburse KPFA for. Well, not reimburse, to release funds to cover this. So we will go. I'll check on that again. This as we go through the audit, we'll check on that again to make sure that we have sent the information over, or we will resend it over if we haven't sent it over to request the release of funds. I know that there was an initial request by Lynn to release funds, but this was just the release that is like part of the agreement.
Yep.
But
the release- Lauren, are you talking about approximately the amount that's on the financial statement for capital expenses, which I guess is about $40,000?
Yes, it would be
okay.
That amount. That's what I will ask.
Okay.
But Lynn had actually sent over.
So that's less than the interest. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
sure.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So, all right, Bill, you're up.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Barbara and Tracy and LaVorn. I guess Tracy partially answered the question. I guess, but the major concern I had related to expenses was the salaries, line 98, General Ledger Code 6000, is $150,000 over budget. So is that because of delays in reduction of staff, or are there still too many staff? Is that going to be a continuing problem for FY12?
I hate to say it, but I think it is.
Because it sounds like that's
something that has to be addressed.
Right. You know how much over?
Well, it's something that is under discussion, and I am a little puzzled by some of the actions of the interim general manager, because after LSB and the PNB decided, you know, certain items needed to be changed in KPFA's budget, and one of the big items that was reduced a significant portion was the salaries. The interim general manager has decided that salaries that were reduced last March should be restored. And I find it strange with the budget that we have for this coming year that that decision was made. And there hasn't been perhaps, you know, he's spoken with his boss about this, but it's at this point a puzzlement to the business manager and to myself.
Point of information, can we talk about this in closed session?
LaVarne, yes, we will need to talk about it in closed session if you want to get specific.
I don't have anything more specific to say.
Yeah, I also have something to add about that, but I'll wait my turn on the stack. And we're probably not going to closed session tonight. At least that was the plan. Is there anybody, Bill, are you done? Do you have any other questions?
Well, that's just a concern because that's, you know, if that's going to be a continuing problem, it sounds like either you need to reduce staff or you need to cut some expenses somewhere else because otherwise we'll end up begin this year too.
Okay, then let me jump in and say that this number is not particularly recent, and I think it's important to say that it pretty much, in other words, KPFA was running six figures over on salaries before the interim general manager ever showed up. In other words, I remember that we had this discussion back at an LSB meeting last spring when the interim general manager had been on board for about 3 weeks. Essentially, the way that it was explained at that time to the local station board was that a number of employees worked more hours than they were scheduled for on a regular basis, and that this was the reason that the guesstimates that came out for the business office were not correct because time cards were turned in with much larger numbers because of some sort of disconnect between what was scheduled and what it actually took to do the job or some such thing, and that there was going to be an attempt in this year's budget to correct for that. I'm not entirely clear whether that happened, but that is the way that it was explained. And we went into closed session and certain employees were, you know, named by name as people who had been working more hours than they had been scheduled for. So I want to say that the majority of this, that's how it was explained to the local board. For restoring salaries, I think that's a very small amount and really less than 10% of the overrun in total. So I don't think you can sort of point to that as the primary cause. It seems that at least the majority of the six figures relates to sort of hourly overruns. And we'll have to take a look at that this year and see if, in fact, it has been adjusted for. I hope so.
I just want to make sure this year's budget hourly projections are realistic.
Yeah, let's hope so. I don't know for sure. I think we'll have to sort of see. I can tell you that this is what happened last year because 6 months into the fiscal year, KPFA was $100,000 over on salaries despite the reductions that had been made, which were dramatic. I mean, 10 employees left and payroll was reduced by some $400,000. And still, it was running over. So this came up very early in the fiscal year as an issue. So hopefully, once we get the first quarter numbers this year, we'll be able to see very quickly if it has, in fact, been addressed or not. That's about all I can do, Bill.
Okay, thank you.
Is there anybody else for the SEC? Oh, wow. Okay, terrific. That was pretty straightforward. Okay. So with that, it is what time? 7:03 Pacific, 10 o'clock Eastern, so we can go for at least another 30 minutes, which is great. So in terms of the agenda for the meeting, I think that what we are up to is Sarbanes-Oxley and the Audit Committee. Who wants to sort of introduce this topic? Should I do it, or does someone else feel able to speak to it? Okay, well, let me start by introducing it, and then we'll go from there. slightly impacts the Finance Committee for a number of reasons. One, because the particular item that brought it to light was a member of the Finance Committee until recently, and secondly, because it's a question of fiscal policy. Basically, Sarbanes-Oxley is a financial reform bill that was passed in 2002 that basically requires all publicly traded companies to follow a very specific set of protocols for financial transparency. Nonprofit organizations are held to certain parts of Sarbanes-Oxley, but not all of it. That said, Pacifica has often taken the position, as it does, for example, with the Brown Act, which also doesn't bind it, that to the extent humanly possible, that it would like to follow these laws that are applied to publicly held corporations, because we feel that, you know, that's the ethical way to operate. So the issues that have come up with Sarbanes-Oxley include a whistleblowing policy, which Pacifica implemented in 2009-2010, a document destruction policy, which Pacifica implemented in 2010, as I recall, separation of the Audit Committee and the Finance Committee, so no individual serves on both simultaneously. And it recently came to light that the Audit Committee should be populated only by members of the Board of Directors and not by local station board members, which is differently than Pacifica, of course, has done it in the past. And there's a number of best practices documents. One of the main ones is from the National Institute of External Auditors that states quite clearly that that's the best practices for an audit committee. So the question I think that's in front of the Finance Committee is, do we want to recommend to the PNB that we do follow the Sarbanes-Oxley protocol with our audit committee going forward? As I said, we have tried to follow Sarbanes-Oxley protocol in other ways, so this would be consistent, but it would, of course, be a change in the composition of the audit committee. And we would, I guess, either make that recommendation or not. I'll put a motion on the floor to that effect, because I think it would probably be a pretty good idea. And then the committee can discuss it and either decide to move ahead with it or not. And I'll take a back on that.
Alex?
Kim. Okay, anybody else?
Kim?
Barbara?
Kim? Barbara? Okay, let's start there. I'm
going,
sure that there'll
Tracy.
Be more. So we'll start with Alex.
I think before we adopt a position on this, why don't we get a legal opinion from Pacifica's legal counsel whether that particular provision of Sarbanes-Oxley applies to nonprofit corporations such as ours? Then we're in a better position to make a decision on whether we want to follow that protocol or not.
Well, I don't know that I totally agree with you there, Alex, but okay, let's leave that on the table, and we'll see what everybody else says. Kim?
I sort of agree with Alex. I mean, as I read it, this doesn't apply to nonprofits at all, and I think I don't know why we would change this policy to comply with, I mean, and Nia's, what she posted, maintains a system that we have. So I guess legal counsel, reading between the CIA provision that Nia posted and the SAR-OX provision that doesn't apply to us at all, should be considered by legal counsel. I mean, I'm not, you know, a lawyer, and I think for us to make a motion based on, well, it would be nice, or maybe we should, is not, I don't think that's appropriate for us.
Barbara, you're next.
Well, I wanted to ask a question, a couple questions. Is I know that some committees have had trouble getting quorum. Has the audit committee had that difficulty?
We
Does
may
anybody
not be
know?
To ask because we're not on it.
Yeah, we can't be on it.
Bill, I could
Bill?
It went months without meeting this year. So I don't know exactly why, but that was a problem.
Well, it seems to me that separating the members of the Audit Committee and the Finance Committee, in other words, we can't be on both, should be sufficient. And it sounds as though we would be putting, I mean, this is just from a practical point of view. It doesn't take into consideration any legal opinion that, and I'm not against us getting a legal opinion about this, but it seems to be practical to have committees that can function. It should be possible for people that are LSB members but not PNB members to serve on that, on the audit committee. It's my opinion.
Anybody else on the stack? I will put myself on. But
yes, Campbell.
Okay, go ahead, Campbell.
I agree with everyone. And I think that the particular points that were quoted in the reference to Sarbanes-Oxley, one in particular I thought was rather significant, and that is in regard to having people with financial expertise. This is something that, insofar as at least fiduciary understanding of fiduciary responsibilities, that Tony Pohl, our former auditor, had sought to provide when he did a session. It was about a two-hour session when we were in California at one time, and unfortunately it was very poorly attended. But I think that that's critical. I think it's perhaps something that would suggest, incorporating financial acumen in persons who are identified for roles in the financial and audit committee of the board. And in regard to the discussions that have come previously, I would move to table the motion.
Okay. This is Tracy. I think that the legal opinion option that's been put out here is a little bit overstated. I mean, the legal opinion obviously is that Sarbanes-Oxley, in most of its provisions, doesn't apply to Pacifica. I mean, that's a different issue than whether or not we have an interest in following best practices and whether or not we want to hold ourselves to the standards that the law holds, for example, Goldman Sachs, which it does in fact hold them to, and whether we want to have a sloppier audit committee than, for example, Goldman Sachs is allowed to have. I mean, it seems to me that since we have had a great deal of conversation about holding ourselves to standards, you know, that are quite above and beyond what the law has provided, that we're probably best off trying to hold a consistent ethical standard rather than going back and forth depending on what the particular thing is and whether we want to do it or not. In this case, probably the audit committee would have an easier time meeting, and it would be smaller if it were directors only. Quorum would be lower, and we might actually solve some of the problems that we've had with having these big, huge 15-person committees that never meet. And as we know, the audit committee didn't meet for 6 months this year. So it seems to me, since it's a financial best practice, since it's consistent with the rhetoric that we've used about wanting to be in compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley, since it is, you know, you can find 50 references to how this is a best practice for audit committees, and since logistically it will help us function better, it seems to me fairly straightforward that this is a good idea, not a bad idea. So
Alex on the stack.
Campbell.
Yeah. So I am speaking in objection to the tabling, and I think this is something that we should recommend. Whether the board will go for it, I don't know. But I'm not really seeing what the downsides are whatsoever. And that said, I heard Alex, and then I heard LaVarne.
Campbell.
Okay. My point about this is that The composition of the audit committee is inscribed in the bylaws. So if we're going to recommend a change in that, that
no, it's
sounds,
it's not Alex. Okay.
It's not. I thought it was.
I'll explain what's in. Yeah, there's something
okay.
in the bylaws that makes it very clear that that's not the case.
Okay. Well, this is why maybe I was basing this on a false presumption. Then I thought since it wasn't a bylaws, if we get a legal opinion that the composition of the committee is in contravention to legal practice, then legal practice trumps the bylaws, and we could just dispense with it. But you're saying it's not in the bylaws, then it's a different issue. Okay.
Okay. Well, let's continue with the stack, and I will read what the bylaws say and why I think that's not the case.
Did you hear Campbell?
I did. There was someone in front of you, Campbell. Okay. So let's take that as a point of information, and I'll show you the clause in the bylaws that I'm thinking of. And, LaVarne, you are next on the stack.
Okay. Ross Wisdom is here, or he was here when I went down about 2 minutes ago. So I'll just go down and ask his opinion. I'll be right back.
Oh, that'd be great. Good. Okay, so that leaves Campbell, and I'll have the bylaws up by the time Campbell's done.
Madam Chair, the problem with attendance this year, I don't know what that was related to, but last year I know that we did have very good attendance. We had quorums at all of our meetings. And I think we accomplished a great deal of work. Maybe that was due to the leadership. Nia Bidiaco was chair of the committee last year. And I think that we accomplished a rather hefty agenda, and despite circumstances that may have been rather challenging. And so I think that your point on, considering the difficulty in getting quorum doesn't really wash, plus which if we have more people involved rather than fewer people involved, then perhaps that would give an opportunity for more people in the foundation to have some greater understanding of financial matters that are of great importance to the foundation, and so therefore we could do better. The last point on this is that the persons who are recommended are usually people who, well, are people who, in fact, are local station board elected delegates, and if they aren't directors, then they are also people who have a fiduciary responsibility to the foundation. So I think that, there are several points that really go against yours, and plus which I don't, while you may have a fair amount of acumen in some of these areas, I would not substitute your opinion for a legal opinion. And this is an important matter.
Okay. A couple of things. I sent this out, probably people saw it, but just to be clear. The Institute of Internal Auditors, best practice. The audit committee will consist of at least three and no more than six members of the board of directors. Each committee member will be both independent and financially literate. The Securities and Exchange Commission. In the USA, a qualifying audit committee is required for listed publicly traded companies. To qualify, the committee must be composed only of independent outside directors. An audit committee member who is not an executive officer, director, or shareholder of more than 10% of any class of a company's equity will not be deemed to control the company and thus not deemed to be an affiliate of the company nor a proper member of the audit committee. This is just sort of, what the practices and the standards are out there in the wake of Enron and all of the other garbage that caused Sarbanes-Oxley. Campbell, don't interrupt. For financial best practices, they don't vary for for-profits and nonprofits, and Sarbanes-Oxley does not bind nonprofits; it bonds for-profits in terms of their audit and finance committees. This is what our bylaws say. Where are our bylaws? Okay, they're there. Board committees. Article 8, Section 2. Except as otherwise provided in these bylaws, all committees shall include blah, 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 one director from each foundation and two delegates, provided, however, that the inclusion of delegates on a committee shall not be required where the board, by a majority vote, determines that the privileged, sensitive, or confidential nature of the matters to be addressed by said committee preclude the inclusion of delegate
acts as committee members in order for said committee to effectively and efficiently perform its duties. So I would read that if it is the opinion of the board by a majority vote that the committee cannot efficiently and effectively perform its duties, that it may in fact preclude the inclusion of delegates as committee members. You may read that differently, but that's what the bylaws say. So it does seem to leave it up to a majority vote of the board of directors. I know there were other people on the stack. Kim, did I hear you?
Yeah. I'm just going to say I don't see any reason for doing this. This is best practices for boards of directors that are not at all like ours. And I just don't see a reason for doing this. I think that by doing it, you have a smaller pool of people who may or may not have financial acumen. I think the chances of getting a quorum with only directors is a lot smaller. And again, I don't see any. I don't have enough understanding of why this law has these provisions for what they think it will accomplish to see how it relates to our situation. I don't know if that's clear, which is why, again, I want a legal opinion. I just think, you know, our boards are very different than...
There's no legal opinion to get Sarbanes-Oxley that does not apply to us. Just like there's no legal reason why we shouldn't have people on the audit and the finance committee at the same time. There's no legal reason. It's a question of policy.
You're not a lawyer.
To the stack, I'm back.
Yeah, but I know, but Sarbanes-Oxley either does or does not apply. It's clear. Okay, LaVarne, you're next.
As I had stepped away, so you're absolutely right. Sarbanes-Oxley, as I heard the last part of what Tracy was saying, was basically written for Enron, and it does not apply to public accounting. It doesn't apply to not-for-profit corporations, foundations. And, however, the state of California has adopted some provisions of Sarbanes-Oxley, and that we can go online and look at what those provisions, some of those provisions are, to see if we need to set up our standards, our best practices based on Sarbanes-Oxley. But as we said, it does not apply to not-for-profit foundations. It was set up again, as Tracy said, basically to take care of the debacle like with Enron and publicly traded corporations. And as far as members on the board, you know, you do not have to be a member of the PNB to be a member of the audit committee. It's just like any of the committees of the board. They're committees of the board, but you do not have to be a member of the board to be on the audit committee. And basically, yeah, our practice is to separate and not to allow members to be on the audit and on the finance. And that's a little vehicle that, you know, used whenever one wants to, because, you know, there is a demand that I attend audit committee meetings. And how can I do that if I'm the audit committee is looking at my work? And so it's our practice not to include members on audit and finance. So we need to adopt the practice and go with it. That's it. And that was I was conveying Ross Wisdom's opinion on the Sarbanes-Oxley.
So can I ask a question here?
10 to the stack.
Sure.
And Bill.
Okay. All right. Let's go. Kim, your question.
Yeah, I just want to ask a clarifying question here. So what you're saying, LaVarne, is that Ross Wisdom said that SAROX does not apply to us, so we don't need to make changes, correct?
He said that there are some provisions in Sarbanes-Oxley that the state of California adopted, and we should just go online, and I can go online and pull that up and see what those provisions are. that applied to not-for-profit foundations. So
I believe it was document destruction and whistleblower are the two, I think.
Yeah, because whistleblower was a part of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Ross's opinion is that we don't need to make changes, just so I'm clear on that. Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't ask Ross about making changes. So he gave no opinion on whether there should be changes made. That's his opinion on Sarbanes-Oxley. So if we start talking about changes, you know, then we have to go into each change and what's being proposed.
Okay, Ken and Bill, and then maybe we're done.
Yes, I just wanted to. Whatever we're voting on, I'd like to limit debate and get to a vote. So people are just trying to draw this to death.
Yeah, I don't know if we're even voting. I may well withdraw the motion. It was just to sort of give us something to
drawing it to death, and some members feel that the longer they take, the more likely they are to give up and vote their way.
Yeah.
So I'm just really saying, let's call the question, clarify what we're voting on. I think we've clarified now what's in the law and what's mandated and what's not. And the benefits.
Okay.
Court of order. Can understand it.
Okay. Well, let's let Bill have his last comment, if that's okay. He's the only person on the stack. And then I might well consider withdrawing the motion so we can just move on without a bunch of votes. Yes, R. Paul. I can do that. It wasn't seconded.
All right.
Can I?
No motion was actually made. You said you wanted to, but you never made it.
Perfect. That's lovely. So then we don't need to vote on tabling it or anything. Okay. So, Bill, you have the last comment.
Well, that's what I was going to say. We haven't made a motion, and I suggest we just think about this and move on to the next agenda item.
Lovely. Done. Okay. So the next item is... Okay, so we're at 7:30. We are going to have to talk briefly about the next meeting. Why don't we try one more item, see if we can get through it, and then we will likely have to set the next meeting and adjourn. The first item on a sort of pending discussion list is central file servers, and I will probably need someone who remembers exactly what that means to kind of go there. And what we wanted to talk about was... A, why there's a need for it, because there certainly seems to be a perceived need, and what we might do to move towards meeting that need. So I'll just open it up to whoever wants to introduce that item.
Our Paul for a sec?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I've brought this up in the past. I think others have too, but we are sending the files back and forth a lot, and what generally happens is people send an email with spreadsheets in it. That's mostly what we do back and forth. Some things get put up on the mailing list's Yahoo website, but as it turns out, that sometimes is flaky because some of the spreadsheets, even if you have them within the nominal limit that Yahoo allows, they go away. We had that problem earlier this year. And also, what that means is when new people come on to the committee, there's almost no history. I mean, they can look at the minutes, I suppose, but outside of that, they can't see the spreadsheets because the spreadsheets are sent in an email that only the participants get, and the most of the time, at least, the attachment isn't preserved on Yahoo. So it would probably be good if we had a central file server that we could put all of these things on so that when somebody says, oh, geez, I don't have X spreadsheet, they could be referred to where it is and download it right away and look at it. And that would be for, like, even, you know, when we're doing the budgets and stuff or the reviews we just did, files up there. And we could refer to the files, and they would be the same files, and it would be, I think, easier for folks to do. Plus, again, you would have a history. Now, we've discussed this, and LaVarne says some folks in Pacifica are working on doing this, and it would be, I don't know, maybe we just need an update on what those folks are doing at this point in time.
LaVarne, do you have an update, or is there anyone else who wants to?
I believe I shouldn't put Otis on the spot here. I can contact him, but I believe that Otis is actually streaming this call. So let me send him a note and see if he would like to speak about this and come on the call. And because we have another server set up that. I'm sorry.
Can you speak clearer, please?
I can't understand.
Can I speak clearer? Well, let me just sit down this drink. Hello.
I would also ask, as a point of personal privilege, if you could speak without the cell phone. I mean, without the speakerphone, because
you know, this phone is going to hang up. I'm gonna pull it off the speakerphone, and it's going to hang up. Absolutely does not. When I take it off the speaker, it goes. You can't hear me. There's something wrong.
Oh, it's not better. So put it back on the speaker and maybe just do what you can do.
Yeah.
Enunciate. Folks, we have to make the best of the conference call scenario. It's not ideal.
Oh, yeah, my point is that I will see. My voice is going. I will see if Otis can come on the call and speak about this.
I'm on the call.
He says he's there.
Okay. Can you ask that question of Otis again? Thanks.
Well, whether the status of it is, it's actually in moderately good shape because there's a piece of code that I finished writing for AudioPort that I could use for this. I'm sorry, that's a trade secret. I shouldn't tell you that. What I need to work out with LaVarne is really the permissions. Who has access to what, stuff like that. And, you know, if it's simple, then it's simple, but it could be complicated. And then we'll have a site, because we do have a lot of stuff up there. All of the stuff after the crash was saved. I mean, all the files and everything. So we have vast amounts of stuff. But anyway, that'd probably be done sometime in January, hopefully before the meeting.
Okay, LaVarne?
Yes, you can go ahead.
Oh, okay. So if anyone has an opinion, why don't you just give me a call. I'm here in the office this week, give me a call, let me know a time, and maybe I can ask Otis and John to be on the call also, and we can talk about your concerns. Because, yes, we have Otis has been working on this for us. We have information set up, so it's just our call in terms of the – in terms of how, as Otis said, all of the information, you know, what is the best way to structure this so that – you can easily access the information.
Well, that's not too hard, but the other thing is, who has access to what?
Yes.
That's going to be the kind of the core.
Yes.
The core complexity.
If anyone wants, Arpar, you want to speak about this, give us a call. We'll just have a little 30-minute phone conversation. We'll send you the number to call in, and that will work.
Bill for the stack.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yeah, Bill for the stack.
I hear you, Bill. Are Paul, LaVarne, are you done?
Yeah, I said okay.
Okay, sorry. I lost the thread. Bill, you're up.
Yeah, this would be great if we can get it implemented, and I know I don't want to create still more work for Otis and John, but it really applies to all the committees. I'll give you an example. Elections Committee. Yeah, you know, I was on it for several years, and not this year. We had a
a public Google group with a file section that has now gone away because Google doesn't support that anymore. And we had a private Yahoo group. And now this year's committee, I told them about both of those. This year, they formed a new Yahoo group. And it's just, all Paul's right. It's really hard for people, new people, to get access to old stuff. And it should be nice if we had it on one of our own servers. But right, knowing who has read access, who has write access, you know, it's not necessarily the same thing. It can vary by committee also, but it'd be nice to have a solution that would take care of all committees.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. Okay, well, it sounds like stuff is in process, and it sounds like Otis may well have an update at the next PNB open meeting, which will be at the end of January, and which is also the time at which this committee turns into a pumpkin. So I think about all that we can do here is those of us who are on the PNB remember to make sure that we want to hear that update in January. And LaVarne and Otis, if we could just get your, you know, commitment that you are working to move this forward. And then I think that's about all we can do.
This is LaVarne.
Yeah.
We are. I mean, it's in process.
It sounds like Otis
has done a lot of work on this. And we, like I said, we had stuff up before the crash. And then Otis has done a lot more to put the information up. This has been our ongoing work project.
Okay.
And what is a work project?
I don't know, but it sounds good. Anyway, okay, so here's where we are. It is 10:36 Eastern Time, and I know these committee meetings are draining, and the East Coast people probably don't want to stay on the phone too much longer. So we have two options. We do need to set another meeting or have a brief discussion about that. We had a total of 5 items on our sort of pending discussions. The next item is file naming protocol. We could commit to putting 10 or 15 minutes in on that if we want, or we could simply move to setting our next meeting. As a straw poll, how do people feel? Do we have one more item in us, or do you want to get off the phone?
Get off the phone.
Question?
Yes, R. Paul?
Aren't we already set for, like, January 10th?
We are. We need to talk a bit about the things that we need to accomplish, and because I think that a third meeting before we cease to exist is indicated. And that's because of some of the things that we've had to take on. Okay. Well, it sounds like there's not much enthusiasm for file naming protocol. Yes, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about that by email. The date, though, remember, we need to get all the delegates need to get their meetings by January 10th, so that, except for KPFK, because they don't need to make travel reservations, so that the new directors can get good airfares to the in-person meeting. And, you know, that those first 2 weeks of January are already filling up. And so WBAI and WPFW looks like they're meeting on the 11th, which is probably going to be too late if they're having a delegates meeting that day to get their directors elected. I hope they're going to have another meeting earlier. PPFT will be scheduling ours at our LSB meeting tomorrow. Some people I know are going to be in until
KPFA is on January 7th. We're pretty good. And we're close to California anyway. Yeah.
Some people didn't want to do it through the 1st, 2nd, or 3rd, or 4th. So we might end up doing it the 9th or 10th. I don't know.
All right. Well, let me just tell you what it is that we need to get through. We need to do our reviews of WPFW and the National Office. We haven't done either of those. We have a process where we're going to discuss and come to a recommendation on the KPFK canopy, and that is going to include, you know, guests from KPFK coming to speak to us. So it's going to be a session that's going to take some time. On our list of pending discussion items, we still have file naming protocol, on-air fundraiser receipts, training update, and accounting platforms. And my sense is to do a good job on all of those items, that 2 meetings is kind of pushing it.
What I was going to propose was that we not clutter up the first part of January, but that we attempt to clutter up the latter half of December. What that would mean is that we could either meet next Tuesday, the 20th, or we could meet on the 27th, which we had reserved for a meeting and canceled.
Oh, I thought it was still on. I have it on.
If we reinstate it, then that'll take care of the problem.
So moved.
Yeah, okay. Either the 20th or 27th.
Okay. Then let's just do that, and then we have three more meetings, and I think we should be able to do a pretty good job.
Wait, I'm confused. So we have the 27th, and we have the 10th. So are you saying we're adding now the 20th?
No, I'm saying we have the 27th. We're not canceling it. We have the 10th. And then at least on paper, we have a meeting on January 24th.
Oh.
If we decide that we don't need the meeting on January 24th, you know, nothing bad is going to happen if we don't hold it. But it's scheduled. And that's the three meetings.
So that
the problem we had was that we had canceled the meeting on December 27th.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And that was looking like not such a good decision.
Oh, and this is LaVarne?
Yeah.
Sorry, let me turn this off. So there's one other thing that I think we need to add to the list. Sorry, this is a new item. This is the recovery plan that we've been working on in FRAT. And are members of FRAT. So I think that we need to send a copy to everyone on the Finance Committee and ask that they review it and give suggestions and be ready to have some discussion, maybe 20 minutes at the next meeting. It's very important. And it's important for our audit because
– Yeah.
And, well, I don't have to go any further. I think everyone understands why.
This is Kim.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kim.
I don't think this is the right committee for that. I think perhaps that it shouldn't be coming here. It should perhaps go to the audit committee.
Why do you think that, Kim?
Because these are audit issues, and so it should go back to the audit committee.
I'm not sure that the financial recovery plan is audit issues, exactly. I think that's a part of it, but I don't think that's the duration of the whole recovery plan. Am I wrong about that?
You're absolutely right. A recovery plan or a plan or a strategic plan or whatever you want to call it is a product of all committees, foundation, and staff. So the Finance Committee has it's not when you say audit or FRAT, that the Finance Committee should approve this motion on the recovery plan and to also to move it to the PNB. So it's the Finance Committee has more of a function in terms of a recommendation to the PNB as any committee.
Okay, definitely, fine. I withdraw then. I mean,
okay. Yeah, Kim, I was kind of thinking the same thing, like, doesn't somebody else have to do this? But
well, whatever,
maybe
whatever
not.
Issues that the auditor addressed would go back to the audit committee. But this is other stuff, so.
Right, right. Some of which, it sounds like, at least some of it falls kind of under our rubric. Okay. So we will agendaize that at future meetings. And LaVarne, will you take care of distributing the recovery plan to the National Finance Group so people have a chance to look at it?
You know, I'm going to ask Ken Hodson in his little folders and stuff someplace, so I'm going to ask Ken's help on that, but yes.
Okay. Good. So we will meet again 2 weeks from tonight on the 27th. WPFW, Marcus, are you still here?
Question?
Yes.
Okay, so you'll be prepared to go forward with a report on the 27th?
Correct.
Question?
Yeah?
On the motion to reinstate the 12/27 meeting, should ask if there's any objection, I think, because we didn't really pass that motion yet.
No, not formally. Okay. Is there any
objection to uncanceling the meeting on December 27th.
There's a grumble, but that...
Yeah, groans are permissible. What we're talking about is objections.
Yes, Campbell.
Campbell objects. Okay, then we'll have to vote. Garpal, could you...
Can I just make a comment? The alternative is probably going to be conflicting with at least one delegate assembly in early January, I suspect.
Looking at the calendar, there's like literally no days in January anyway. So I don't really know. I mean, we would be looking maybe at like a Friday night. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So the one thing that I would say is if we did shift to January, it's probably not going to get better in terms of being like a more convenient time or something like that. You know, it'll be hideous. Okay, but if Campbell objects, then we should go through the vote and see what the majority of the committee does. The motion is to uncancel the meeting on the 27th.
Ken Aaron.
I vote affirmative.
Jim Boyd.
Yep.
Bill Crozier.
Yes.
Marcus Jeter.
Yes.
Campbell Johnson.
No. And we do have dates.
Jim Kaufman.
Yes.
R. Paul Martin, a grumbling okay. Tracy Rosenberg.
Oh, yes.
Alex Steinberg.
I guess so.
Barbara Whipperman.
I ditto what Alex said.
Barn Williams.
You know, I have no opinion. I abstain.
Okay, abstain.
Okay.
All right, 9-4, 1-1 abstention.
And many grumbles. Okay. So duly noted, we're scheduled on the 27th. Marcus, your report for WPFW will happen on that day. And, LaVarne, we will get something from you for the national office?
Absolutely.
Summary? Okay.
Yeah.
I would like to make a statement before we adjourn, if that's where you're going. This is Ken.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else before we adjourn. I don't think so. Ken, what's your statement?
I believe, that I might be wrong, but I believe I'm the one who brought forward the concept of improving our system of filing documents or having a naming convention for documents. And I tried to list some input from others. Has anything been presented to the Finance Committee from anybody?
I am not aware of anything. Did anyone else see anything?
Yeah, there's lots of conventions listed on the Internet, but if somebody's got to take the time to do the research, come up with one that's most appropriate. I think there are some members who've already looked into this. Maybe R. Paul would know.
I can make some suggestions. I mean,
if you could, I would just, my statement is it would be well appreciated if somebody could forcefully advocate for what they consider the best one and send it out an email so we don't get into long, protracted discussions in committee over phones that sound like they're part of a Mattel radio network, you know?
Yeah, what I think we can do is we can sort of be a little flexible when we bring up the item so that it gives people time to kind of think about it a bit and come up with their suggestions. Because right now it's like item, it's like the next item, but maybe we push it back a little into January.
What I'm suggesting is that people submit their suggestions in email to the Yahoo group so that when we get to committee, we don't have to waste time talking about it theoretically. People can read the logic behind the suggestion. This is all known territory. We don't have to invent the wheel here. We just have to select a solution which already exists.
I'm just being whiny because it's December and it sounds like homework, and I'm thinking that I don't know if people will get it done by the 27th.
Okay. That's my request.
Thank you.
People who volunteer.
Thank you for the statement, and yes, we will try to not take up the item until people do that, and Finance Committee members are encouraged to research file protocols and come with specific suggestions.
Also, we need to note, I think everybody has elections this month, so here and there some treasurers could change, so that could be happening for the 27th meeting, too. just...
Yes, that is true, and yes, we will do a survey about that at every meeting between now and the transition, and the full transition at the end of January. Make sure we are properly constituted. Thanks for the reminder. And old treasurers don't go away until you've given your annual report. Marcus, for example, if anything happens to you, you still have to come. No running away. Okay.
Well, just
all right.
Okay, this is Kim. Just point of information: our LSB is this Saturday, so mm-hmm. Who knows who'll be me next time.
My recommendation would be that you notify any new treasurer when the next meeting is, and that you might, in fact, want to briefly call in at least to introduce the new person and perhaps help ground them in the committee and what we're doing. One can certainly do that as a non-voting member for a transitional period of one meeting, and I think that's not a bad idea. So I might recommend something like that.
Okay.
But we'll see. Okay, I think we're good. Thanks, everyone. We will meet again on the 27th. Should I go ahead and schedule an executive session for the 27th?
No.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember what for.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything.
The APFA project, if we need to talk about it, but maybe we don't.
Okay.
The what?
Okay.
I don't think so. Ken, can you stay on the line? I'd just like to ask you about where we can have people access
okay.
the recovery plan.